And our next speaker is Warren Dresner, who's going to be speaking on emerging risks and emerging opportunities. Warren is an executive director based in the Willis REIT Sydney office and is responsible for client management and broking across a range of classes of business. Warren has reinsurance placement and analytics experience in Australia, the UK, Europe and the USA, covering a range of classes of business including catastrophe, property, casualty, surety, builder's warranty and then mortgage insurance. So welcome, Warren.
Thank you. So if Steve was the optimist, Andy the realist, my job is to be the pessimist and talk about the risks. But I'll try and have a glass half full approach and talk about some emerging opportunities as well. So I'll start off by looking at some of the risks that emerged in the past to see what common themes we can learn, but also look at where risks may emerge in future, how we can manage emerging risks, and then finally, how can we turn some of these risks into insurance opportunities? Because we are in the risk game and our job is to create products based on risk, based on transferring risk. To start off though, I thought it might be interesting to look at a quote from the past, and some of you may recognise this. So this is a quote from Donald Rumsfeld in 2002 when he was trying to justify war on Iraq. And he said, as we know, there are known knowns, there are things we know. We also know there are known unknowns. That is to say, we know there are some things we do not know. But there are also unknown unknowns, the ones we don't know we don't know. And at the time, John Quiggin, who's an economist, an Australian economist, commented on this speech and he said, although the language may be tortured, the basic point is both valid and important. Having defended Rumsfeld, I point out that the considerations he refers to provide the case for being very cautious in going to war. Equally, we could say cautious in underwriting risk. Sorry about the plagiarism. So anyway, what can we learn from some of the risks that emerged in the past? So on this slide, we've got three examples of some risks from the past that emerged over time. So in the case of asbestos, medical evidence started to emerge in the 1930s, linking the product to the disease, yet claims only started to emerge in the 60s and 70s. So in the 1920s and 1930s, asbestos was very much an unknown unknown. You could argue, though, by the 60s and 70s, it started to become a known unknown. People knew about the problem, but they couldn't quantify it. So there was uncertainty about the impact, and it was definitely perceived to be a significant risk. To date now, the asbestos claims have, it's hard to get an exact figure, but I've read figures over $200 billion for the industry. Y2K, I think most people, I'm assuming most people in the room remember the Y2K or the Millennium Bug? Maybe not. So this was the problem that a lot of businesses worried about their IT systems couldn't cope with going from the year 99 to 00, thinking that the year was going to be interpreted as 1900, not 2000. A whole IT consulting industry was devoted to this problem. There was a lot of uncertainty about the impact. In the end, though, it became the catastrophe that never was. It really became a fizzler. So it was an emerging risk at some point in time. It was probably a known unknown. There was uncertainty about the impacts. It turned out there was no impact. And finally, terrorism. So you could argue terrorism's been around for thousands of years. It's not really an emerging risk, but it evolves. In the current climate, with regional conflicts, with social media, it's definitely evolved in the last few years. And again, it's probably a known unknown now, but very uncertain in the impact, where it's going to happen, the modes of execution, or whatever words you want to use. So basically, some common themes are, it could be known unknown, or it could be unknown unknown. There's definitely uncertainty about the impact, but at the time, it's perceived to be a significant risk. So where may risks emerge in future? Now this list is inherently incomplete. The next asbestos is more than likely going to come from something completely unforeseen, but it's still useful to have a framework to start to think about where risks might emerge. So for example, legal change and regulatory change will affect insurers' liability payouts. A good example is class actions, the advent of class actions. Before class action lawsuits, small claimants couldn't get together to actually fight a large company. Same with third-party litigation funding. That can cover the costs and cover the risks of losing the case. Societal and behavioural norms change over time, and that leads to different compensation payouts. I find it astonishing that 20 years ago, sexual molestation was tolerated at an institution level in some cases, whereas today that's completely unacceptable, and insurers are now paying out on policies that were written 20 years ago. Climate change, I won't talk too much about. I know there's a speaker later on in the day. But that's definitely a known unknown. We know it's happening, but the impact is very much uncertain. And then we get to innovation and technology. And for the next few points, I'll focus on in the slides that follow. So for technology and innovation, in our world today, innovation is a constant. All of these products on the slide are now known unknowns. We know about them, but the impact and the downside is probably unknown. So whether you're talking about systemic food chain risks and the use of aluminium, scientists show that aluminium is a neurotoxin, yet we're still eating lots of food that perhaps passes through aluminium and no one's doing much about it at the moment. 3D printers, fracking or hydraulic fracturing, all of these have potential downside risks that are uncertain at the moment. Some industries as well, so pharmaceutical or the finance industry, innovation is endemic, it's constant. And the GFC was a great case in point for the finance industry where innovation in finance was going at a pace that the regulators just could not keep up with. And that's where you get some risk and downside risk. And we've talked about driverless vehicles already today. Great technology, and from a consumer point of view, it'll change the world. But there are risks, at least in the short to medium term, for insurers. Even if you're not insuring the truck in that picture and you're insuring the white car, the risk profile has changed as soon as those driverless vehicles are on the road. Drones is another great example. They've been around for around 5 years, mainly in military use, but they're starting to be exploited in commercial use, so in agriculture, in oil and gas, deliveries. And not only, so on the slide we talk about coverages at risk, so public liability, professional indemnity, any kind of bodily injury cases. But it's also about invasion of privacy and nuisance. So you might have seen a couple of years ago someone flew a drone into the White House lawn, and you might have also seen on the weekend at the US Open Tennis, someone flew a drone into the stadium for one of the matches. Very much a developing technology and very much unknown from a downside point of view. We also get into what's called the Internet of Things, which is all about connected devices. So that may be your mobile phone, your computer, your Fitbit, but also your washing machine, your dryer, your air conditioner, your car. From a consumer experience point of view, this is absolutely revolutionary. And I think Steve mentioned in the last presentation, it's going to change the world. The next 10, 15 years is going to change at a pace so much faster than, say, the last 10, 15 years. The study on the right is a study from Swiss Re, which shows the number of connected devices per person in the world. And it shows that in 2015, there are on average 3 devices per person. But by 2020, that's going to grow to 7 devices per person. The same study goes on to say that by 2025, a family of 4 will have 100 connected devices between them, and during the course of their daily activity, will come into contact with around 3,000 connected devices. So it truly is revolutionary, but the increased connectivity raises questions about network and data security. Mitch is going to talk about big data next, and there are a lot of benefits from a data point of view, the amount of data that's going to be captured, but insurers are going to be at risk for any problems in the data collection, any problems in the network and security issues. And this is just a couple of pictures that I found in the last couple of months in the media about some data issues. So the car, the white car was a Jeep Cherokee in the US. They've got a Uconnect media system, and hackers showed that they could hack into the system and affect the car's steering, braking, acceleration, and actually turn the car off. Jeep Chrysler actually recalled 1.4 million vehicles as a consequence of this. The picture on the left, I'm not sure how clearly you can see it, but it's actually a picture of a drone with a gun strapped to it, where a teenager showed that they could remotely fly the drone to another space, press a button, and fire the gun. So, potentially, there are a lot of personal injury risks, a lot of liability risks for insurers as well. And I couldn't help myself, Andy, so I had to talk about reinsurance just a little bit. Another one that I find quite interesting, it's quite topical at the moment, is this concept of new capital in the insurance and reinsurance space. Traditionally, if People wanted to earn a return from insurance. They set up a company and started to write policies. And that was true for insurance or for reinsurance. What we're seeing now, though, is that a lot of investors are looking for a return, and rather than starting a business or buying shares in Swiss Re or AIG, they're creating financial instruments to access reinsurance and take risk that way. So currently we estimate that third party new capital is around $65 billion. Now the amount of property catastrophe reinsurance capacity bought globally is about $300 billion. So that represents over 20% of the worldwide capacity. It's quite meaningful. If you go back 4 or 5 years, that number would have been less than 5%. So it's also changed really rapidly. What's interesting is that $65 billion to investors is nothing. Like, look at the size of the global equity market, $69 trillion. Global assets available for investment, $128 trillion. So the potential for this to grow is huge as well. Now, being an optimist, from a buyer's point of view of reinsurance, this has been great. Supply-demand balance has shifted. There's a lot more supply, so prices are falling. So from a buyer's point of view, that's great. However, are there systemic issues? Are there emerging risks coming about from this new capital? Now, a lot of the skeptics talk about investors being fickle. They say, yeah, they love insurance today because interest rates are low and world markets are bad. They could turn their back on insurance tomorrow and go and invest in pork bellies or whatever the other class might be, whatever the flavour of the day is. But it's not just those that are creating financial instruments on their own that could flee. What we're seeing is that traditional reinsurers are starting to take advantage of this new capital or insurance-linked securities as a form of cheap capital. So, for example, Renaissance Re, I don't mean to pick on Renaissance Re, but they're a very sophisticated traditional reinsurer. In their balance sheet, they show they've got about $11.2 billion of capital. 5.6 of it is their own money, and 5.6 is from investors that are putting these yellow towels. So 50% of their capital is actually coming from these new sources. So what happens if there's a flight away from insurance as an investment class? Does that mean that reinsurers will lose half their capital and the supply-demand shift will swing completely the other way? Potentially there's a huge systemic problem. Now, it's impossible to guess and envisage what emerging risks are going to come in the near term. But I guess the key message is it's important to stay alert and try and keep informed about emerging issues. And insurance companies need to set their emerging risk management strategy as part of their overall risk framework. So that means set surveillance incentives and rewards to encourage contrarian views, build capacity for surveillance, encourage employees to look out for contrarian concepts, and importantly, have adaptive planning and management, so anticipate adverse outcomes, and actually be prepared to revise decisions. From an insurance company's point of view as well, the downside is not that you'll get one or two rogue claims that could be really severe from something that was completely unforeseen. The real problem comes from systemic risks. So risks that actually cross geographies, cross industries, markets, products, and cross underwriting years. That was very much the case for asbestos, which just hit 30 or 40 underwriting years in one. So reinsurance can also be used to mitigate unknown and systemic risks. So traditionally, reinsurance tends to be bought in silos by product, and it tends to be bought on an annual basis. So here's an example, say a company in 2012 has, I think it's 9 lines of business, and they buy reinsurance in different ways for each line of business. So the blue represents the reinsurance, and the grey represents the retained risk. That works all very nicely. Then the next year comes along and they go and buy another reinsurance program, and that's shown in green. What you see over time is you've got all these years where you bought all sorts of reinsurance, but if you look carefully at the grey, you've got a lot of build-up of retained risk. And what happens if some sort of systemic risk emerges that affects all those lines of business and all those underwriting years? You can potentially have a problem. So maybe you need to be creative about the way you buy reinsurance and stop buying it on a silo basis or an underwriting year basis and try and collate all that risk within the grey and have it covered by some sort of casualty catastrophe cover. Once you understand risk and can measure it, you can start to look for opportunities. And this can come in the form of coverage expansion, so insurers expanding cover, which has happened throughout time as clients' demands change, and also new classes of business. And cyber is, it wouldn't be an emerging risk presentation these days if I didn't mention cyber. So cyber liability insurance is very much the flavour of the day. And there have been a number of high profile cases recently. So obviously I wasn't familiar with AshleyMadison.com, but I've done a lot of research for this presentation and now I know a little bit about it. The US government got hacked a while back where their personnel records were shared, and targeting the US was a big case where in 3 weeks of holiday trading in the US, 40 million customers' debit and credit card records were compromised. So it's huge potential for risk. Companies are realising the potential now because of these high profile cases, so demand for cover is growing. The problem is it's very difficult to underwrite. It's difficult to isolate the risk, it's difficult to mitigate the risk. And accumulation control is a problem as well. So a lot of data, as more and more data is held in the cloud, there are not that many cloud providers, and most of it, I can't remember the statistic, but there are 3 cloud providers dominating that space. So if there's a problem with one of the clouds, insurers can potentially be exposed to hundreds or thousands of potential risks at the same time. Most of the development's been in the US today, and a lot of that is because their data protection laws and regulations are more developed than in other countries. But Australia's growing. The industry here, it's estimated that it's only around $10 million in premium, not very big. But just about every insurer out there, every commercial insurer, is looking at cyber liability and what their options are. So, to conclude, there are always going to be known unknowns and unknown unknowns. Technology is ever-evolving, and we're more connected globally than ever before, which means that change is happening faster than ever before, and it's more widespread than ever before. Ongoing management is essential to minimise the downside risk, but if you can do this well, change creates opportunities, and we should be looking and managing emerging risks as much for the opportunities that it creates for the insurance industry as it does for the downside risk. Thanks.